Welcome to this Market Commentator podcast. It is MoneyWeb's weekly podcast where I speak to leading investment professionals. And I have a very special guest this week. My guest is Alistair MacDonald. He is the Vice President and Institutional Portfolio Manager for Franklin Templeton Emerging Markets and is based in Singapore. And Franklin Templeton is, of course, one of the largest emerging market specialists in the world. And they look at several markets around the world, including South Africa. Alistair, welcome to the show. The first half of the year wasn't a good one for emerging markets, and this was mostly due to concerns over rising U.S. interest rates, a stronger dollar, and, of course, concerns about the impact of a potential trade war between the United States and China. What are your views on the current environment for emerging markets?
Okay, well, thank you for the question. So I think you've absolutely hit the nail on the head in terms of the key drivers of market sentiment in emerging market year to date. I think our general view is that we've seen a divergence between an overwhelming focus of the market on macroeconomic issues, and so specifically the US dollar and trade concerns, as you mentioned, and somewhat ignoring the underlying positives from an equity fundamentals perspective. So we find it interesting in talking to clients that we spend much of our time focused on, inevitably at the moment, from somewhat of a defensive standpoint, spending much of our time focusing on the broader macroeconomic issues, whilst trying with a very high degree of effort to really focus in our clients' and investors' minds on the positive underlying fundamentals at a company level. So when it comes to the macro side of things, undoubtedly, a strengthening U.S. dollar, if sustained, is bad news for emerging markets. However, our view, and it's also shared by our global macro team, is that emerging market currencies, or at least certain emerging market currencies, are actually quite heavily undervalued relative to the U.S. dollar. Markets are forward-looking, so a lot of negative sentiment towards EM currencies was already priced in if we go back to 2013 and 2015. And up until very recently, we had actually seen a strong performance out of emerging market currencies, in particular over 2017. The concerns we've seen year-to-date and U.S. dollar strength year-to-date has been driven by a slight upward revision in terms of market consensus estimates on interest rate trajectory in the United States, as well as we think an element of risk aversion relating to trade war concerns. We don't think this derails the story from an emerging market equity investor standpoint, and certainly from a trade war perspective, we think there are a host of aspects that are still favorable from the perspective of emerging markets.
But there seems to have been, you know, some emotional response, maybe an overreaction, as if you alluded to, especially to macroeconomic developments. But do you foresee a normalization of exchange rates in the near to medium term?
If we look at U.S. economic policy, and when one thinks about the longer term value of the U.S. dollar, I think it's fair to say that we certainly do see the relative fundamentals as being attractive in certain emerging markets. You have in the U.S. a short-term boost to economic growth driven by these tax cuts that have gone through, and any potential impact on inflation that may have will in turn potentially push up rates somewhat. But over the next, say, 2 to 3 years, you're expecting U.S. rate of growth to trend back down below 2%. These tax cuts are entirely deficits funded. And in addition, one of the key aims, as we all know from various tweets of the U.S. administration, is to reduce the trade deficits that the United States has, which will inevitably almost require a weaker U.S. dollar. So you have somewhat of a dichotomy in terms of pressures on the U.S. dollar. And so fundamentally, we do find some underlying attractive aspects of EM currencies. When we look at the growth outlook, when we look at the level of valuations at the moment, which are heavily beaten down, you know, we find a lot to actually be positive about.
Which emerging markets do you think will outperform others if the scenario you've just described plays itself out?
So one of the interesting aspects about the trade dispute so far is that you've seen a very asymmetric market reaction. Generally, if we think about sort of post-war market consensus, it has generally been that free trade is good for all parties, you know, both those your nations on there's two sides of the coin, and both sides benefit. The way the market is reacting at the moment is that a trade war between the US and China is negative for China, but has no impact on the US. At least that's the conclusion one might draw from the divergence in terms of equity market performance. And so when we look at the valuations of Chinese companies, when we look at the underlying strengths in the Chinese economy, the ongoing reform efforts of the government there, you know, we're very optimistic on the outlook for our positioning in that country. And we do think that the market is pricing in an excessively negative outcome when it comes specifically to China, but also more generally towards the end when it comes to trade. You know, China has become a large counterweight to the United States in terms of volume and value of trade across Asia and across emerging markets as a whole. And so we think that this market reaction we've seen has been really quite excessive. And perhaps if we're optimistic, we can put down some of it to the fact that you know, it is summer. It has been the World Cup. Many traders have been distracted and perhaps looking to take some risk off the table in the short term. And then as you know, the year continues, we may see a firmer level of support for Chinese equities and EM equities in general. But in terms of our positioning, what primarily informs our country weights is essentially bottom-up stock selection. So we're not really taking a top-down view on any given country. It's just that in China and amongst a number of other nations, we do find, you know, a lot of very good quality companies.
Let's talk about the South African market. What is your perception of the investability of our market?
So I think you've seen in South Africa a considerable improvement in sentiment. You know, there'd obviously been you know, some political challenges and previously, and also concerns of the impact of declining commodity prices on the South African economy. In both of those instances, some of the headwinds have been removed, and there is perhaps a greater degree of optimism. If we look at the extent to which investment has fallen off in the South African economy and over the past several years, I think it could be fair to say that there is a potential for that to increase you know, boosting overall economic growth and market sentiment as well. So when it comes to South Africa, we're more optimistic than we were a couple of years ago. Our exposures there are still relatively limited. We do have an office in South Africa, and we've been present in South Africa for around I believe 20 years now from an investment standpoint. So it's a market in which we have a high degree of depth from a research perspective, but where opportunities have been relatively few and far between. So, you know, on a forward-looking basis, we're definitely more optimistic on the trajectory of the South African economy.
Are you increasing your exposure to the local market?
At the moment, we're remaining cautious. I think it takes time to see things turn around at the overall market level. And so at the moment, we're cautious, and our primary exposure in South Africa is not really a domestic-orientated exposure.
Looking at some of your funds, I'm looking at the fact sheet of the Templeton Emerging Market Balanced Fund, and it's quite clear that you are invested in Naspers. It is the single largest investment equity holding. But I also see that you hold Tencent as well. Why would you be invested in both those counters?
So in general, when we look at two positions, there can be a valuation difference between the two of them. And accordingly, investing in one over the other at times can be relatively more attractive. Underlying exposure to the Chinese domestic economy and technology sector is what we find attractive. It's just a question of the relative valuations between those two means of accessing that sector.
Are you concerned about the significant discount to which Naspers is trading to its investment in Tencent?
To be honest, I probably wouldn't be able to go into much detail on that just from a disclosure policy on our side.
Do you have any access to South African bonds?
No, so we exclusively invest in the equity side.
So the African market in general, are there other opportunities on the continent which you think would offer more potential than the South African market?
We do also invest extensively in so-called frontier markets. So we do have exposures across a number of other African countries, from Senegal to Kenya, from Egypt to Nigeria. So, you know, from a stock-specific basis, again, we do find some excellent quality companies. You know, perceptions externally on some of these countries can at times be negative, and that provides an opportunity for those investors who are willing to perhaps go a little bit against the grain and you know, search in these less popular markets to find you know, quality companies that stand to grow at a sustainable level in coming years. So yes, we do and have been investing you know, fairly extensively across Africa for quite a few years now.
If you look at an emerging market, especially the smaller ones, not the big Chinas and Indias, how do you go about evaluating the potential, you know, as you want to outperform other markets as well, and you expect a significant upside in the Chinese market? How do you evaluate those opportunities?
Really, for us, it comes down to having our research team on the ground in these countries, traveling in the countries, meeting extensively with the management, with the owners of various companies. We would argue that, you know, particularly in your frontier markets, and particularly within smaller capitalization stocks across the emerging market universe, that there's a lot of potential for inefficiencies and mispricings, in part just because these typically are not crowded trades. Almost by definition, you don't have the same degree of passive investments in these markets or companies or ETF investing. And so one of the plus sides of that is you perhaps less correlated with global markets and certainly the large cap indices, which can at times move with a degree of unison, in part driven by the extent to which an ETF buying and selling can influence overall markets. So really, in the end, we find these inefficiencies, you know, ample grounds for us to find opportunities. And so having, you know, local language speaking research analysts, people who are familiar with the cultures, who understand people across the table from them, as company managements and so on, that really is critical in determining whether a company is an attractive investment over a long-term time horizon.
In which emerging markets are you currently investing, and you know, conversely, in which markets are you actually reducing your exposure?
Well, so currently we would be invested in, you know, across, I would imagine, well over between 30 and 40 markets across our various funds. And so what's really determining this, as mentioned, is, you know, is individual company basis. So not so much taking a top-down view as to whether we should increase our exposure in Kenya or South Africa at the expense of China, but rather where do we find the best companies. You know, one of the areas where markets have been a little bit more reticent, shall we say, has definitely been Russia. That's a market in which we've found valuations for the past couple of years have been extremely appealing, and where we have built some exposure, but also a market that faces some, you know, at times higher macro or regulatory risks than some others. So that's a market where we've had some success. But really, you know, a lot of the larger markets have been attractive. You've seen a rebound in both Russia and Brazil from deep recessions. You've seen ongoing secular growth trends in China and India. Paired with that, you have a host of smaller countries that are relatively neglected, which have, you know, many individual companies that we find very attractive.
I want to return to bonds. In your emerging market bond fund, you have significant exposure to Argentina, Brazil, but also a significant investment in Ghana, of all places. Why would you invest in Ghana and not, for example, in South African bonds?
I'm afraid so. That's actually a different team managing that strategy. So our team is just exclusively focused on the equity side. So I'm sorry to say I wouldn't really be able to provide much insight on that side of things.
South Africans at the southern tip of Africa, sometimes we believe, you know, we're not more significant in world terms than we actually are. If you are a South African investor and you would like to invest offshore in the broader international market, How would you advise those investors to invest which markets and in the current uncertain environment in which asset classes? And if you can maybe even be more specific, what would you do if you would have a significant investment here? Where would you invest that?
Yeah, I think you hit on a very common aspect of investing globally, and that is that most investors have a very high degree of home bias. Now, perhaps if you're living in the United States, which is the world's largest and deepest capital market, then that home bias is perhaps more justified. But if you're perhaps in a smaller market, whether that be the UK or South Africa or any other, indeed, emerging or developed market globally, it becomes harder to justify that lack of diversification. So accordingly, we think it's very important to have geographic diversification, but also one aspect of that is sometimes overlooked is the inherent sector diversification that you can gain through being invested overseas. And so when one looks at the South African market and the South African economy, it is perhaps relative to other countries globally, disproportionately impacted by commodities, for example. The financial sector is relatively large, and homegrown domestic technology companies are relatively few and far between, although, of course, as you mentioned, Naspers has some exposure in China and elsewhere. So accordingly, we would argue that investing in countries that do provide a degree of sector diversification, and so the US, of course, has a high degree of technology exposure, but often overlooked, emerging markets actually has a higher degree of technology exposure at an index level than even the United States. And so when we speak to investors and when we travel in South Africa in particular, often clients say, well, this is an emerging market. I already have my emerging markets exposure. Why would I need to invest in other emerging markets? And well, the answer really is what I've just been specifying. The drivers of economic growth and of equity markets across differing emerging countries, it can be wildly different from what is determining returns within a given country such as South Africa. So we think those are some of the important considerations from an equity standpoint that investors should be looking at.
That was Alistair MacDonald, a Vice President and Institutional Portfolio Manager for the Franklin Templeton Emerging Markets Group, and he is based in Singapore.